This is the Houston Chronicle for today, Friday, April 26, 2024, on Sight into Sound Radio. You may also listen on your computer or on your favorite mobile device at sightintosound.org. Hello, everyone, and welcome to our program. Beginning on today's front page, a report by Taylor Goldenstein of the Austin Bureau is titled, All Held in Austin Protest Released. Citing lack of specificity, judge rejects nearly all charges. Criticism of police action grows. Most of the demonstrators arrested Wednesday at a pro-Palestinian protest on the University of Texas at Austin campus have had their charges dropped, officials and lawyers said. Nearly all of the charges were for criminal trespass, a misdemeanor. Alleging protesters failed to heed warnings to disperse. A magistrate judge rejected the charges because the charging documents were not specific about how the protesters were notified to leave, said Austin criminal defense attorney George Lobb, who was representing some of them. Travis County attorney Delia Garza said Thursday that her office was presented with 46 arrests for criminal trespass in connection with the protests, and the court declined all of them for lack of probable cause. A report by Evan McDonald of the Houston Chronicle is titled, According to Families, We Need to Know the Truth About Organ Transplants. Their request for restraining order is effort to help preserve critical evidence. Sonia Garcia isn't sure whether her son Richard Mostaca could have received a liver transplant at Memorial Hermann Texas Medical Center before he died last year. But she intends to find out. Garcia, along with other relatives of three patients who died while seeking liver transplants at Memorial Hermann, have petitioned for a temporary restraining order against a doctor accused of manipulating records in a way that may have prevented some patients from receiving life-saving organs. She said Wednesday that she wants to know what happened for herself and for other families in her position. What these families have, to a person, asked more than anything is, we need to know what happened. We need to know what went on in this case. What happened with our loved ones? We all need to be together in this, she said at a news conference about the court filing. And we need to know the truth, she continued to say. The request for a temporary restraining order filed Tuesday in Harris County 295th District Court asks a judge to prevent Dr. J. Steve Bynum from deleting or destroying critical evidence that may be relevant to a potential wrongful death claim in the future. The sides are scheduled to appear at a hearing Thursday morning, according to court records. Attorney Jason Hastings, whose Hastings Law Firm is representing the families, said his clients have not had any contact with Memorial Hermann since news of the scandal emerged earlier this month. A report by Jen Rice of the Houston Chronicle is titled "County Projecting $15.7 Million Deficit. Lower Revenue and Higher Costs Upend Surplus Estimates." Officials expect to cover difference. Harris County is on track to end the current fiscal year with a $15.7 million deficit, driven largely by lower than expected property tax revenue and the increased costs of operating the criminal justice system, according to the county's chief budget officer. The fiscal outlook is worse than it appeared in January, when the budget office projected a small surplus in the county's $2.4 billion operating budget. But county officials aren't sounding the alarms just yet. Instead, arguing that adjustments will be made to curb future deficits. The fiscal year 2024 deficit, in and of itself, isn't a crisis, but the trend line is certainly concerning, Harris County Budget Director Daniel Ramos said. The county has been proactive about dealing with changing financial circumstances, Ramos continued to say. After the county ended last year with a modest $6.5 million surplus, Ramos told Commissioner's Court in January that the county was expecting a $5.1 million surplus in the current fiscal year, which will end in September. He did, however, warn that the direction wouldn't continue. "Don't expect to see a surplus here in future years," Ramos said. The budget office will present a five-year plan in June with options for improving the county's financial footing, and has been working on tightening up policies and procedures, Ramos added. Property tax revenue was $15 million lower this year than the county had planned for, Ramos told members of Commissioner's Court on Tuesday. "What we've seen is every year the number of appeals continues to go up," Ramos said, adding that as more people protest their property taxes, the county's revenue decreases. The Harris Central Appraisal District, the agency that hears property tax protests, has been agreeing to slightly lower assessments because of the quote-unquote sheer volume of people protesting, Ramos said. The number of protests has risen from 457,167 in 2021 to 531,398 in 2023, according to HCAD. And now at this point, we'll move on to other items. Deputy fatally hit by vehicle was true public servant of 20 years. A Harris County Sheriff's deputy died Tuesday morning when he was struck by a vehicle on Grand Parkway in Cypress, Sheriff Ed Gonzalez said. Deputy Investigator John Hampton Cadu, 50, had stopped on the highway to help another motorist when he was struck, Gonzalez said. He was pronounced dead at Memorial Hermann, Texas Medical Center after being flown there by helicopter. Cadu was a 20-year veteran of the sheriff's office. He was most recently assigned to the department's violent crime unit. He was also an Army veteran. Cadu's death was the sheriff's office's first line of duty death since 2022. Our hearts are broken, Gonzalez said. Our spirits are crushed, but we stand united, Gonzalez continued to say. Gonzalez described Cadu as very well liked and a phenomenal individual. Those statements are in quotation marks. It wasn't his assigned job to help a stranded motorist, but it was in character for him to stop and help, Gonzalez said. He was a true public servant in every sense of the word, Gonzalez said. A report by Dylan McGinnis and Mike Morris of the Houston Chronicle is titled, According to Court, City Must Spend More on Drainage. Houston City Hall will have to use significantly more tax money to fight flooding with street and drainage projects. After an appeals court sided Tuesday with engineers. In a years-long lawsuit over how much funding the city devotes to that purpose. The 14th Court of Appeals opinion marks a victory for flood advocates who fought for more projects, while dealing another blow to the city's growing budget gap. The city put about $123 million in property taxes into its drainage fund in last year's budget to pay for street and drainage projects. That money funds an array of projects, from full street overhauls to sewer and ditch maintenance, to help maintain Houston's drainage system. One of the lawsuit's plaintiffs suggested the amount allotted to drainage will have to grow by more than $100 million in this year's budget, compounding City Hall's already existing deficit of about $230 million. That $100 million increase is roughly the same amount that the city uses to fund garbage and recycling collection for a year, or its entire parks budget. Mayor John Whitmire said that he agrees the city needs to invest more in drainage, but he said he does not believe Houstonians would elect to do so through a court order. He said the city plans to appeal the ruling. While I recognize and campaigned on the importance of drainage infrastructure, I don't believe drainage infrastructure should compete with public safety funding, Whitmire said in a statement. This shows again the need for us to have a grown-up discussion about the short and long-term condition of city finances, which I inherited, and we should not continue to kick this can down the road, Whitmire continued in the statement. Out of Washington, a report by James Osborne and Claire Wao of the Houston Chronicle is titled, Harris County Getting Solar Funds. Federal grant aimed at panels and batteries for low-income areas. Harris County will receive part of a $7 billion federal grant toward installing solar panels and battery systems in low-income and disadvantaged communities across Texas. Part of President Joe Biden's plan to expand access to solar energy nationwide. The administration announced Monday that 60 applicants have been selected for its Solar for All program. With more than 900,000 American households expected to get rooftop solar panels or access to community solar farms. Today, we're delivering on President Biden's promise that no community is left behind. Administrator Michael Regan of the Environmental Protection Agency said, Harris County is leading a coalition of Texas municipalities, including Dallas County and the cities of Houston, Austin, San Antonio, and Waco, that represent 11 million low-income Texans. With plans to install solar panels and battery storage systems in homes and other buildings across the state. The program will also create training programs for residents to find jobs in the solar sector. The coalition applied for a $400 million grant from Solar for All and received nearly $250 million. The coalition's proposal aims to lower customers' bills by more than 20% in targeted communities. According to a statement issued after it was announced as a recipient. A report by Megan Menchaca of the Houston Chronicle is titled, HISD Continues Teacher Screenings. Educators at nearly half of campuses will soon see if they're proficient enough to keep jobs. Houston ISD teachers at about half of the district's campuses will learn on May 6 whether they are eligible to keep their jobs under a proficiency screening process. Even after the district reversed course on using a similar process for principals following community backlash. HISD introduced a proficiency screening this academic year to determine which teachers will be eligible to teach in the 130 schools designated as part of state-appointed Superintendent Mike Miles' new education system program for the 2024-25 academic year. Districts that are concerned about educational equity and who want to turn around academically struggling schools should place their most effective teachers with their least proficient students, the district wrote in a document obtained by the Chronicle. NES teachers must prove proficiency under the state evaluation system's professionalism criteria and meet benchmarks on achievement and instruction on two screenings developed by HISD to be guaranteed to keep their jobs. If they don't pass either screening, they will not be able to work at NES schools next year, and a small percentage will not be eligible for any job in the district. HISD notified teachers of the results of the first screening results on March 8th. and required all current NES teachers who passed to sign contracts by March 29th or forfeit their positions, according to district documents. Teachers who participate in the second screening will either learn if their contract remains valid or if they obtained eligibility to work in the district in May. A report by Evan McDonald of the Houston Chronicle is titled "Patients in Limbo After Transplants Put on Hold." For years, doctors at Memorial Hermann, Texas Medical Center told Maria Rosario Gomez that vomiting blood would be a telltale sign that her liver failure had progressed to the point where she would need a transplant. When it happened Monday, though, the Houston resident was unable to get the life-saving transplant she needs, and it remains unclear when she will. Gomez, 69, is among hundreds of patients in need of liver or kidney transplants who were left in limbo when Memorial Hermann announced earlier this month that it was inactivating both programs due to, quote-unquote, a pattern of irregularities with liver donor acceptance criteria. The hospital opted to halt kidney transplants as well because both programs share the same leadership structure, Memorial Hermann said in a statement. Gomez is hospitalized at Memorial Hermann, where she said doctors are trying to identify the source of an internal bleed that is the likely cause of her vomiting blood. She and her son, Nathaniel Gomez, said that her care team is working to get her moved to the waiting list at Houston Methodist, which, along with Baylor St. Luke's Medical Center, is trying to accommodate liver transplant candidates from Memorial Hermann. With her health deteriorating, though, Gomez and her son worried there may be limited time to get her on the waiting list elsewhere. "I feel like I'm dying," she said in a phone interview from her hospital bed. "And nobody can help me," she continued to say. Memorial Hermann on April 11th said it found evidence that a doctor manipulated records for liver transplant candidates, potentially preventing some of them from receiving the life-saving care that they needed. The hospital declined to identify the doctor, but the New York Times reported he's Dr. J. Stephen Bynum, a prominent surgeon who has been leading the hospital's abdominal transplant program since 2011. Multiple federal agencies, including the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services and the Health Resources and Services Administration, are investigating. A statement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services said Memorial Hermann is also conducting its own investigation. Memorial Hermann said in a statement Friday that it is working toward reopening its kidney transplant program in the near future, though it is not specified when operations could resume. There is no timetable for resuming liver transplants, the statement said. The hospital has 38 patients on its liver transplant waiting list and 346 patients on its kidney transplant waiting list. Memorial Hermann said in a statement Friday that all of the liver transplant candidates are being transitioned to other hospitals, and that it has expedited the process for those most in need of a transplant. Most of the kidney transplant candidates have opted to remain on the waiting list at Memorial Hermann, the statement added. A report by Eric Dexheimer of the Houston Chronicle is titled, How $95 Million Lottery Win Was Likely a Sure Thing. Analysis suggests someone bought all 25.8 million combinations. By the April 22nd Lotto Texas drawing last year, it had been 7 months since a player hit a jackpot. But the pot keeps growing until someone matches all six numbers. The long drought meant the grand prize had swollen to $95 million, the game's third largest ever. That night's draw, 3, 5, 18, 29, 30, and 52 matched a single ticket purchased in a small store in Colleyville, outside of Fort Worth. Winners have 6 months to claim their prize, either in payments over 30 years or a lump sum, typically worth about half. On June 27th, the state of Texas issued a check for $57.8 million to a New Jersey-based limited partnership apparently formed to collect the jackpot, called Rook TX. The Texas Lottery Commission, whose proceeds mainly fund public education, celebrated the big win, generating much-needed revenue for Texas schools. Then Executive Director Gary Grief wrote, also writing, quote, what the Texas lottery is all about, end quote. But a statistical analysis of the April 22nd Lotto Texas drawing strongly suggests that night's drawing wasn't what a lottery is about at all. Rather, the numbers indicate that Rook Tex, again, Rook ROOKTX, beat the system. Unbeknownst to the millions of players who invested their hopes and dreams into the game and its life-changing jackpot, the winner had already been decided. Rook TX appears to have engineered a nearly risk-free and completely legal multi-million dollar payday. And the state of Texas helped. While lottery players have occasionally exploited a hidden mathematical advantage to guarantee a lottery profit, there's one sure way to win a jackpot. Stefan Mandel did it 14 times, and it had little to do with luck. He simply bought up every numerical combination. Yet Mandel, a Romanian economist and mathematician, had to master both probability and logistics. The jackpots needed to be both big enough to cover his costs as well as favor his chances of being the only winner. Splitting a payout could be ruinous. because buying so many lottery tickets required going to dozens, if not hundreds of separate stores, he required a team of accomplices. The recent introduction in Texas of digital lottery apps has lowered the logistical obstacles. The Lotto Texas drawing of April 22nd, meanwhile, presented a perfect storm of high reward and low risk that practically guaranteed that an opportunistic player with a sizable bankroll could walk away with tens of millions of dollars. The evidence is in the numbers. The first thing someone wanting to buy a lottery drawing would need to know: how many tickets would you need to buy to cover every numeric combination in a game like Lotto Texas? The answer, said Tim Chartier, a Davidson College math professor who studies sports and lottery analytics, $25.8 million. Evidence suggests someone was thinking along those lines in the April 22nd game. A report by Sam Gonzalez of the Houston Chronicle is titled, "Parents Unhappy as School's Zoning is Removed." Montrose and Heights parents are searching for answers after the appointed Houston Independent School District Board of Managers voted to eliminate zoning at the popular Wharton and Helms dual language schools. Preserving their school-wide Spanish immersion programs, but seemingly removing reserve seats for neighborhood children. About 50 Wharton parents and other Montrose community members met with board member Adam Rivone on Tuesday night to communicate their frustration with the decision and urge the district to find an alternative solution. Seated in the main dining room of the Midtown Bar and Grill, many parents spoke openly about how they moved to Montrose specifically so their children would be zoned to Wharton, and now feel like their future is up in the air. With pre-kindergarten applications closing next week, families who assumed their children would be enrolling at Wharton or Helms for the first time find themselves unsure of where their kids will be going to school when the new academic year begins in August. "I'm not angry. I'm fighting tears right now because I'm scared," said one mother whose daughter is set to start pre-K next year during the open forum portion of the meeting. "I thought this was such a wonderful opportunity, and I feel like the rug has been pulled out from underneath me. Because literally, as I was putting in the application, I'm hearing about these changes. And now, I don't know where my children are going to go," the mother continued to say. The district sent an email to families Monday that current students at Helms and Wharton will automatically retain their seats next year. The message urged families who are zoned at either school but not currently enrolled to reach out to HISD Office of School Choice, which is working with principals at each campus to provide as many seats to zone families as possible. The message reads, "Establishing the new path for Wharton and Helms is a complex undertaking, and families have a variety of perspectives and priorities. The district will consider a number of relevant factors and the full range of feedback we hear from the two school communities, the district said in a statement, noting that HISD will hold community events to garner feedback regarding long-term plans at both campuses. On Wednesday evening, the district sent another notice that will aim to ensure that any long-term plan includes provisions that ensure families who are currently zoned to either school will keep their seats for at least 3 years and receive priority access to available seats in the future. HISD will host two community meetings at each school through May. A report by Dylan McGinnis and Abby Church of the Houston Chronicle is titled, Extension by HUD May Save Harvey Home Plan. The U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development granted an extension on Texas's efforts to offer disaster assistance after Hurricane Harvey, potentially offering a lifeline to a city plan to build roughly 120 new homes in southwest Houston. Houston received about $1.3 billion in federal disaster recovery funding after Harvey in 2017, which was mostly meant to replenish housing that was damaged or wiped out in the storm. One of the programs in that portfolio involved buying large tracts of land and developing affordable single-family homes. The city purchased three sites with those intentions. Facing tough market conditions and the impending deadline on Harvey money, though, housing officials decided last fall to scrap the plans and put the land it had acquired up for sale. Land Commissioner Don Buckingham told city council members on Wednesday that HUD extended the state's deadline on disaster recovery funding, likely saving the city's plans for a development on Stella Link Road, a former business park near NRG Stadium. The news means Houston can put out funding notice for developers interested in building the homes. Hopefully, this will bring us the opportunity to really get all of these dollars delivered like we need to get them delivered, Buckingham said. A report by Edward McKinley of the Austin Bureau is titled, Judges Gut Law on Book Rating. Court allows ruling that cited freedom of speech to stand. Key portions of a law signed last year by Governor Greg Abbott requiring booksellers to rate books for sexual content when selling to schools will not go into effect after the 5th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals declined to reconsider an earlier decision. It's a win for booksellers, especially independent ones, who sued the state last year, saying the law violated the First Amendment and would devastate their businesses. Valerie Kohler, who owns Houston's Blue Willow Bookshop and is a lead plaintiff in the suit, said she was happy about Tuesday's ruling, but that the law already has caused a chilling effect that has led to lost orders. The damage to us is mitigated by the fact that We don't have to review every book and rate every book that we've sold to the school library. Kohler said of the court's decision, but the damage has been done in terms of the libraries across the entire state that have changed their policies in a way that makes it hard for new books to get in, Kohler said. School libraries have become a target of the right in recent years, with lawmakers and activists petitioning to pull dozens of titles off the shelves, many of them related to LGBTQ identity and relationships. The law would have required booksellers to rate all books for sexual content, block any future sales of quote-unquote explicit books to schools, and review all past school sales to recall the newly banned material. Independent bookstores had warned that the requirement was unworkable and would be far too expensive to implement. A report by Nusaiba Mizan and Marissa Luck of the Houston Chronicle is titled HEB Expands in Katy. State filings indicate the chain plans a new store on Jordan Crossing. HEB appears to be planning a new grocery store in Katy, according to state permit filings. The 121,179 square foot grocery store is proposed at 29,711 Jordan Crossing Boulevard in the Jordan Ranch community, according to state permit filings. The San Antonio grocer could begin construction this year, according to the filing, which is subject to change. The Tulsa-based architecture firm Narate, which has designed other HEB Texas locations, is listed as the designer of the project. HEB did not immediately respond to a request for comment. A new store could save residents a trip south to Cross Creek Ranch HEB toward Cinco Ranch Boulevard, or east down I-10. The area east of Jordan Ranch has a Kroger and Trevini supermarket, a South Asian grocery store. HEB in March opened a store in Humble, its 95th in the Houston region, and on Morton Ranch Road in Katy in February. It also seeks to expand in Dallas-Fort Worth, where its store openings have drawn crowds. A new HEB in Katy would help serve the region's fast-growing Far West suburban area. The Fulshear area was a top-selling community in the latter half of 2023, according to data from Houston Association of Realtors. That area, more than 30 miles west of Houston, had the largest year-over-year jump in home sales in the fourth quarter, with more than double the number recorded in that same period in 2022. Jordan Ranch is among the nation's top-selling master-planned communities, as tracked by residential real estate consulting firm RCLCO. A report by R.A. Schwetz of the Houston Chronicle is titled Supreme Court Backs Ranchers in Suit Over Flooding. The U.S. Supreme Court ruled that 4 dozen Winnie area ranchers and other property owners can continue to sue Texas for compensation for flooding damages. This suit alleges a state project widening Interstate 10 caused the flooding that killed animals and left homes and land under feet of water in Hurricane Harvey and Tropical Storm Imelda. The Supreme Court ruled unanimously to vacate a lower court's decision dismissing the case. The ruling now allows the case to be tried and means that in Texas, property owner rights are protected by both the state and federal constitutions. The case alleges that when the state widened Interstate 10 between Houston and Beaumont from 2 lanes in either direction to 3, a 3-foot-high concrete barrier separating the traffic hurtling east and west was erected, quote unquote, to act as a dam. Water in the area drained south toward the Gulf. After Tropical Storm Imelda poured down on the region, floodwaters the height of the barrier covered the Winnie area as far as the eye could see to the north, while the lanes south of the barrier remained comparatively dry, allowing for transportation. Lawyers for the property owners argued that the flooded lands constituted a violation of both the Texas Constitution and the U.S. Constitution. The Fifth Amendment's Takings Clause protects against the government taking private property, quote, for public use without just compensation, end quote. Texas had moved for the case to be heard in federal court, then said there were no grounds for the property owners to bring a case against the state in federal court. Instead, the state's lawyers said an act of Congress would be necessary to give plaintiffs grounds to sue in federal court. While laws passed in the 1800s explicitly allow people to sue local jurisdictions for taking private property without just compensation, there is no law that mentions such cases against states, the state argues. The Fifth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals agreed. However, when the case reached the Supreme Court, justices pushed back on this logic. This seems to me like a totally made-up case, because they did exactly what they had to do under Texas law, said Justice Sonia Sotomayor. It's almost a bait and switch, Justice Sotomayor continued to say. A story by Bayo Ong of the Houston Chronicle is titled Pop-Up Falls Apart. Popular turkey leg hut and oyster collaboration burned by allegations. On Sunday afternoon, Houstonians lined up at an empty parking lot at the corner of Alameda and Rosedale across the street from the turkey leg hut for char-grilled oysters. Plump, palm-sized Gulf Coast oysters hissed on a charcoal grill. A man squirted on what's referred to as Tiger Special Sauce on top of the bivalves. Some dyed it with bits of bacon and a shower of Parmesan cheese. Among the 5 items on the menu, A popular order was the Tiger Special, which includes a topping of crab meat and crawfish tails. Unlike every other weekend for the past month, Royal Belloc, also known as Tiger, the 38-year-old New Orleans man known as Tiger of the Tiger Two Dozen, was missing. In the latest controversy surrounding Turkey Leg Hut and its co-founder Lindale or Lynn Price, Belloc and his fiancée Jaquelle Johnson said they were no longer part of the Oyster pop-up operating across the street from the Third Ward restaurant. They allege Price, who invited them to bring their Tiger Two Dozen to Houston last month, copied their menu and recipes in recently launching the Oyster Hut and still owes them nearly $3,000. This was Tiger's thing. He was excited to be in Houston, Johnson said. But we learn Lynn will kick you to the curb and steal your stuff, continued Johnson. Price, who is estranged from his wife and Turkey Leg Hut co-founder Nakia Holmes, met Bullock in New Orleans during a second line parade. They bonded over a love of cars, and within weeks, Tiger Two Dozen opened as a no-frills pop-up with a single grill and Turkey Leg Hut branded tent. A few weeks ago, Belloc wanted to formalize an agreement with Price. The relationship between the two started falling apart when Tiger Two Dozen didn't want to work with Price's lawyers to hammer out a business arrangement, Johnson said. He kept telling us, "People don't know y'all. They know Lynn," Johnson said. "That's fine, but at the end of the day, it was supposed to be a 50-50 split." And now in today's sports, a report on the Astros out of Chicago by Matt Kawahara is titled "No Relief in Sight." Abreu surrenders tie-breaking homer while bats stay quiet as losing streak hits 5. Another anemic output by the Astros offense on Thursday left the thinnest of margins for their pitching staff to navigate. An embattled bullpen proved unable. Cubs prospect Pete Crow Armstrong crushed a tie-breaking 2-run home run against Brian Abreu in the 6th inning that sank the Astros to a 3-1 loss and 3-game sweep at Wrigley Field, extending a dismal start to their season. Houston is 7-19. It is the Astros' second worst record after 26 games in franchise history, excepting only their 1969 team, which started 6-20. This year's team has been swept in 4 of its first 8 series. "I don't think it's easy on anybody," said starter Justin Verlander, who worked 4 1/3 scoreless innings. "We've dug ourselves in a hole. You've got to fight. We got to be ready to fight. Gotta scratch and claw our way out of this. Do whatever's necessary," Verlander continued to say. The Astros took a 1-0 lead into the sixth inning. Reliever Rafael Montero, who had stranded two inherited runners in the fifth, returned to start it. Dansby Swanson struck a leadoff single and stole second. Nick Madrigal's comebacker caromed off Montero's glove for a single. Miguel Amaya hit a sinking line drive to right field that eluded Kyle Tucker, who threw Madrigal out at second as Swanson scored. Manager Joe Espada called on Abreu, arguably the steadiest member of his struggling late-inning bullpen trio, to try to preserve a tied game. Crow Armstrong arrived 0-for-16 in his young major league career. He squared to bunt on Abreu's first pitch. Abreu sailed it to the backstop, sending Amaya to second. His second pitch was a 95-mile-per-hour fastball over the plate. Crow Armstrong crushed it 396 feet into the right field seats for a game-turning swing. Abreu had been scored upon once in his last 10 outings before Thursday. He has allowed 14 hits in 12 innings this season, however. Four of those are home runs. The setup man, who posted a 1.75 ERA last season, owns a 4.97 mark so far this year. Up next for the Astros is a battle with the Rockies on Saturday in Mexico City, beginning at 5:05 p.m. Saturday's game will be broadcast on television on SCHN and broadcast on the radio at 790 a.m., 93.3 FM in Spanish, and also in Spanish, 1010 a.m. Elsewhere in sports, in the NBA playoffs, in Oklahoma City, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander scored 33 points, and the top-seeded Thunder beat the New Orleans Pelicans 124-92 to take a 2-0 lead in their first-round Western Conference playoff series. Elsewhere, the Miami Heat scored 111 and beat the Boston Celtics, who scored 101 on Wednesday night, in what is now a tied series. We have now come to the end of our program. This has been the reading of the Houston Chronicle's first hour for today, Friday, April 26, 2024, on Sight into Sound Radio. You may also listen on your computer or your favorite mobile device at sightintosound.org. And please continue listening for the second hour reading of the Chronicle, coming up next.